Take off your jacket, because it's time to get deep under the covers with a loose read.
Yes, it is. Morning, Nate.
Morning.
How are you?
Good, and thanks for getting us in on a Tuesday.
Oh, of course. Thank you for coming up.
Thank you for coming.
We missed our Puka Puka chat yesterday, so excited to get into it today. What have you got for us?
Okay, so I've gone a bit out on a whim here and bought in two books, really, which are Finnish autofiction. So they're called, the first book in the series is called Lowest Common Denominator. The second is called Backwhite. And then later in the year, there will be a third one called The Red Book of Farewells. They were first written in the 90s, but they're part of the series that Penguin is doing called the Penguin International Writers Series, where they're translating for the first time kind of very significant books around the globe. And it's a great series. If you want to start on translated fiction, it's the perfect place to be. You've got this one, you've got weird Iranian feminist fables, brutally kind of violent Eastern European short stories, weird communist Romanian literature. It's kind of, it's the most amazing series. But these are my favourite books from them. And they're by Okay, I'm sorry to any Finnish people listening in on this, but I've been trying to figure out how to pronounce this name. I think it's Perko Saisio. And they're autofiction. So autofiction is when it's kind of fictional, but it's also just the writer's life. In kind of English language, we often think of people like Rachel Cusk, who kind of writes herself into everything she writes. And these are kind of coming-of-age stories. So Lowest Common Denominator is set between kind of the modern day, a writer whose father is dying, and childhood in 1950s Finland, growing up in a communist family. Backwhite, which is the second, is split between kind of the first year of secondary school and the first year after. And they're told in these little kind of vignettes of chapters, of kind of episodes in a life. And they're kind of fundamentally about the self. And I'll just read out the actual first page of Lowest Common Denominator, because it's one of the best openings to a book I've ever read and really tells you what this book is about. So I'll start it off now. The first time it happened, I was 8 years old. It was a November morning. The street was black and shiny, swollen behind the windows, wet with sweet. I saw myself in the window, a chubby, bad-tempered child. I pulled on wool socks, too tight for my feet. A button was missing from my vest. Mother took a 5-mark ball out of her purse. I stuffed it in my sock. And that's when it happened. I wrote a sentence in my mind. She didn't want to wake up. I changed the sentence. She didn't want to get up yet. I added another sentence to the first. She was too tired to go to school. And then I improved the second sentence. She was just too tired to go to school. I looked triumphantly at Father, who was in his shirt sleeves drinking black coffee and reading the Taiko Sanomat newspaper. Mother sat by the entryway mirror, spreading a touch of rouge from her lips to her cheeks as she hummed Harbour Nights. Neither of them noticed that I had become she, the one always under observation.
Wow.
Damn.
And really paints a vivid picture, right?
It paints a vivid picture and also tells you something that this book does often, which is move between the I and the she. And it moves between sentences, between paragraphs. You get the I, then it takes you into this character. And it's really about the self and the kind of fragmentation. And I think that's why the timelines have kind of been chosen, because childhood is such a bizarre time for the self. You're kind of adapting to everyone around you. People's expectations, the mother, the father, the grandparents, and you can see that shaping the person. Equally, when your parent dies, that's a kind of real moment for selfhood, that person who was always kind of part of you and now they're gone. And then, I mean, I don't think I really even need to say, but the first year of secondary school and the first year out of secondary school are such wild times of figuring out who you are and kind of what you want to be. And this Perko Saisio, I mean, is a writer. So the character is really always wants to be that writer. And you can see that it goes into that kind of what sentences can do, what writing can do very often. And Backwhite, which is the second one, particularly, there's an English teacher who's very important. And the second half of the story, the first year of secondary school, she leaves Finland and goes to Switzerland to work in an orphanage and imagines it will be kind of Julie Andrews and The Sound of Music and running through the fields and singing and teaching a kind of circle of adoring children the Do Re Mi song, that type of thing. And of course, all that is completely wrong. It's kind of naive, and there's this split between naivety and a kind of sharp intelligence. And equally, I think what this book does very well is shows that passage of time in the childhood in the 1950s Finland, growing up in a communist household, which I think was very interesting to read about. They get grapes for the first time, and there's this big fuss about kind of how exotic a grape is. And the timelines allow you to see how, I guess, modernity catches up to people. And I think people often kind of scoff at fiction, which is more domestic, but I think it shows time incredibly well because it's not all just great movements. People are caught between changing times. It's not we're this and then we're that. Yeah. It's there's a regret there and a loss there. And and this book shows that really well.
Those kind of hovering times of your life where you're on the brink of something, but it's kind of nothing's happening yet.
Exactly. Limbo. And that's what I watch about Backwhite as well, because it's teenagehood and where everything feels like you're not. Everything feels like your life is kind of going too fast and that you don't have time to be the person you want to be, which of course is ridiculous when you've got all that life ahead of you. But everything feels momentous. And the thing section I loved in Backwhite was the kind of narrator seeing that her very cool, always single aunt, and she's the real ideal. So she announces to her whole family and all her friends that she is single too, and they're all just like, "We know, no one wants to date you." And then the price of being single seems like the worst thing someone could ever be, and it switches so quickly between wanting to be that and desperately desiring it, which I think is a really good analogy for teenagehood.
Yes.
Totally. Autofiction's made a real dent in the literary scene in the last couple of years, eh?
Yeah, which is why
it's gotten quite big.
It's why this book is interesting, because it's kind of earlier than what most of the English language autofiction would be. But a lot of people compare it to something like Elena Ferrante with her Neapolitan Quartet, which isn't quite autofiction, but kind of the wives of people and coming of age. But what I actually find very interesting about this book is Northern Europe, particularly Scandinavia, has a really old tradition of autofiction.
Wow.
And some of the best books, there's one called Childhood Love Dependency by Tove Ditlevsen, which is it's kind of similar as this, but it's Copenhagen and all throughout her life, which is, I think, one of the best books ever written. There's Tove Jansson, who created The Moomins. I don't know if you guys... It's like a kids' book series. Yeah. But she's famous in Finland for this autofictional account of growing up in a summer cabin. And you can see those influences here. And then getting into more modern Scandinavian fiction, there's people like Hanne Austervik and Vigdis Hordjof, who are very interesting. Vigdis Hordjof particularly because her family actually sued her after she put out an autofictional account of her childhood. Ooh. And then her sister wrote a book about being the sister of a famous writer who's lying about their childhood. So I think there's really something about Scandinavia and Northern Europe, I think, which just makes them do these interrogations of selfhood and kind of writing and family that is really great to read.
Wonderful. So you've got the first two on the shelves at Time Out, and then you're waiting for the third.
We're waiting for the third, which I believe is out in October.
Ooh. Gives you time to read the first two.
Exactly. And I think, honestly, if you like it works on so many levels. If you like historical fiction, if you care about writing and want to see what goes into being a writer, what writing can do, it's also, I should have mentioned this because it really adds to the fragmentation, it's also a queer memoir of growing up. It hasn't. I think the next book will be more, but you can see the influence on that, and it just adds to that fractured selfhood. So I think this book works on so many levels.
Good stuff.
Fractured selfhood. Wow, awesome. Hey, thank you so much, Nate. Always a pleasure to have you up in the studio. Thanks. Chatting books. Everyone, head over to Time Out and pick up the first two of the trilogy before the third comes out. Thanks, Nate.
Thanks.
That was Loose Reads.